Hey, it's Hannah Baba, host of Cross Current. Just a couple of times a year, we ask for your support, and now's the time to do that. Make sure to contribute today to our fall membership campaign. Keep us strong. If you want to contribute, go to kalw.org and click donate. And thank you.
KALW.
When you're thinking of like, oh, I don't want to vote, think about us as youth and the ways that it's going to impact them.
Young people in Richmond are organizing to reach apathetic voters.
I give them a lot of information. I talk to them about things that I'm learning at the moment. And I'm like, okay, like this is what's going on right now.
Today, we'll hear how to make an impact even when you're too young to vote. Then we explore how the way schools embrace the LGBTQ+ community impacts how kids shape their attitudes and actions.
We created Gender Justice to be a place where kids could feel safe, where they could have allies to be with them.
It's the fourth episode from the new season of TBH, our series made by, about, and for teenagers. I'm Hannah Baba, and this is Cross Currents. This election year, KALW's been listening to what matters to different Bay Area communities. A lot of times, that means we're talking to eligible voters, but we wanted to hear from the people who are too young to vote. First up today, we'll learn about the issues that matter most to the under 18 crowd. And I spoke with KALW's elections production manager, Johanna Miyake, who went to the Rise Community Center in Richmond, California, for the launch of a youth-led campaign called Vote for Us. And Johanna joins me now. Hey, Johanna.
Hey, Hannah.
So tell me about this campaign, Vote for Us. And it was started by Richmond youth.
Yeah. So these kids at Rise Community Center, some as young as 14 and others in their early 20s, are calling on their community to bring people together. The community gathered to paint a huge street mural with the message, Vote for Us. Mm. And it incorporated visuals that demonstrate their core values like art and community and music. And they had a voter registration drive, as well as pre-registration for 16 and 17-year-olds. This allows them to be automatically registered to vote on their 18th birthday. And this place is like a haven for Richmond youth. I spoke to a 14-year-old named Melanie Ramirez. She's a member at Rise.
Personally, it's like being a part of a little community. You could just like walk in and just like you're open to a new world of opportunities in this building. This building has given me money, food, time to express my creativity, and it's just been wonderful. It's been a wonderful experience.
So, Johanna, what are some of the issues these young people are talking about in Richmond?
So they're really passionate about issues that Americans around the country are facing, as well as state and local issues. Affordable housing, LGBTQ rights, reproductive freedom, safe and inclusive schools, and even climate justice. Here's Melanie again.
Right. What matters to me is in Richmond is the air quality. Ever since I learned about the air quality, I've been mad at a certain company. Not going to say names, but I just think it's terrible what they did. How could you do that, honestly? How could you pick a small place and then just, like, how do you say it, make the air quality more bad? Like, that's horrible. And for money? Oh, my gosh.
How, Johanna, are they raising awareness for these issues that they care about so much?
So in addition to this event and other like outreach activities, they're using their medium of choice, social media.
Of course.
They are using it to engage their community and, like many Americans, to get their news.
Right.
Melanie explains it like this.
My whole has one Instagram account, and I get it. I'm all about getting reliable sources. So if you want to judge me, judge me. But there's this one, what's it called? It's called like, it gives you a bunch of daily news basically about what's been going on. And it showed me like one of like the 20 promises that Trump made once, and they were all a little crazy.
Well, I mean, good for Melanie, you know, that's great to hear. I know Melanie can't vote, but did she share her thoughts on who she would vote for between Harris and Trump?
Well, in fact, she did. And she makes some pretty good points. Here's Melanie again.
I'm talking about Kamala. She is not the most, for me, there are some topics that I am opposing with Kamala, but she's the only candidate we have right now that promises us a good future.
Right.
That promises a future with rights. And that's what this country started on.
I don't understand.
Okay, Johanna, thank you so much for sharing with us today.
Thank you so much for having me on.
That was KALW's elections production manager, Johanna Miyake. You can find all our election coverage at kalw.org/2024elections. And we've also got live elections programming at our KALW downtown event space that you can come to. Join me tomorrow, Tuesday, October 1st at 7:30 p.m. for The Bay Votes, Black Voices and the Election, live at 220 Montgomery. I'll be moderating an important panel discussion about the diverse Black electorate, featuring panelists like Pastor Michael McBride of Live Free USA, Amy Allison, founder of She the People, and Professor James Lance Taylor from USF. Join us tomorrow, 7:30 p.m. at 220 Montgomery in downtown San Francisco. You're listening to Cross Currents from KALW News. I'm Henat Baba. Next, we're bringing you the fourth episode of the new season of TBH, our podcast made by teenagers with help from instructors and editors in our KALW High School Summer Podcast Institute. This episode is all about the role schools play in supporting students and shaping attitudes around the LGBTQ plus community. I'll hand it over to the hosts.
This is TBH. I'm Anthra Agungwal, a senior at Leland High School in San Jose, and your host for today's episode. This podcast is made by, about, and for teenagers, and for anybody else who wants to hear what's on our minds.
And I'm Amalia Madrid Lilly, a senior at Oakland Technical High School, and your other host for this season of TBH. So Anthra, tell me about what we're going to be hearing today.
Today's episode is about the importance of schools in the fight for LGBTQ plus rights. Amaya Dorman McKenzie just graduated from Berkeley High School, and she has two moms. She's going to share her experience. Hey, Amaya, so why did you decide to do this story now?
Well, I think LGBTQ plus rights are a hot topic for this upcoming election. We're seeing far-right politicians attacking LGBTQ plus students. I mean, in 2023 alone, state lawmakers introduced 42 bills in at least 23 states that restrict discussions around gender and sexuality in K-12 schools. There's been so many more anti-LGBTQ plus bills introduced and signed so far this year, and depending on how the election goes, this may just be the beginning.
Why do you think politicians are focusing on schools and students?
School is where you spend most of your time as a kid, right? So school is where you're getting a lot of those formative messages that impact your beliefs. What your teachers talk about in the classroom is what you will learn, and the social culture of your school will be the one you exist in every day. And a lot of this is out of the control of parents, but parents often have really strong opinions about what their kids should be learning and what their environment should be like. And parents are voters, and children are the face of the future, so everyone has a stake.
So, Amaya, you've had a pretty unique schooling experience. How do you think your story could help others?
I just wanted to share my story about growing up in a school district that did care about LGBTQ plus students, even though it wasn't perfect all the time. I think my experience could inspire people in other school districts to speak up for what they need and to be allies at a time when people in government at local and federal levels aren't always on the side of the LGBTQ plus community.
Well, I'm really excited to hear it.
Sitting around the dinner table every night is a routine so familiar and grounding for me. I love to look at my family's faces around the table, so happy to be eating a meal cooked by Mama, my mom, Sonia. Often, it is a time full of raucous laughter as my little brother makes witty jokes and my other mom, Mommy or Kim, weighs in with good-humored comebacks. My moms always tell this story about how I expressed my pride in my family from a really young age. Here's Sonia.
You came home from preschool one day, and you'd been playing with your friends, and you were playing animals because that's what you always like to play. And one of your friends had said, well, in a family, there always has to be a mommy and a daddy. And you had said, that's not true, because in my family, I have a mommy and a mama and a donor.
I have been in the Berkeley Unified School District, or BUSD, for my whole school career, 12 years. I just graduated, and I wouldn't have wanted it any other way. My experience was, of course, imperfect, but overall, I felt accepted and safe. As I look back, I realize how much of this positive experience was shaped by the efforts of the community around me, especially my mom's and other queer families. As soon as I started elementary school, my parents realized they weren't getting the support they were looking for, and they took it upon themselves to fill that gap.
As queer families, we had an incredibly important role to create kind of an institutional set of traditions that would allow us to feel seen and celebrated that weren't there.
That was one of my moms, Kim. At that time, more elementary schoolers were identifying as transgender and non-binary. But even in progressive Berkeley, California, they were experiencing bullying and exclusion. My other mom, Sonia, a researcher in the area of public health and gender studies, knew she needed to do something about this.
Why is it that we are so threatened by someone who does not cohere to a gender binary defined by masculinity norms, femininity norms? Why is this? Why is it that this is something that threatens people so deeply, right?
That's why she helped start the gender justice program at my elementary school when I was in fifth grade and my brother in second. It was a 12-week program that ran for 2 consecutive years and was designed to help kids deepen their understanding of gender norms and different kinds of families, as well as being an ally. The Trevor Project is an LGBTQ+ crisis intervention nonprofit. They conducted a survey in 2023 that shows that LGBTQ+ youth with access to affirming homes, schools, and online spaces, as well as access to gender-neutral bathrooms at school, reported lower rates of mental health issues. In other words, they have a much better experience at school when policies make explicit efforts at inclusion. And that's what gender justice was all about. Here is Ashley Talbot, my old kindergarten teacher and co-creator of Gender Justice. She also says that allyship was essential.
We created Gender Justice to be a place where kids could feel safe, where they could have allies to be with them, their peers, their friends, that, you know, could also learn language on how to be an ally and what to say to kids.
I asked Ms. Talbot what she thought the program's impact was on the community and school policy.
So I think it definitely changed how adults looked at things and how they really wanted to create like kid-centered spaces. And then I also think it helped support other kids who maybe didn't always feel as comfortable or courageous to be able to share parts of themselves. They were like, I think that I can share those parts of me. There are spaces in school where, you know, I feel extra safe to share those parts of me.
Today, the school which housed Gender Justice, Washington Elementary in Berkeley, has extensive policies in place in an effort to help all students thrive. The school has hired more queer staff, including a trans teacher who Ms. Talbot works with closely. They also have new gender-neutral restrooms and weeks of pride celebrations. The list of changes goes on. But this was not the case at other schools in the district. I talked to Zach Sinclair, a trans parent of a trans student who specifically requested an elementary school which they thought had the best trans-inclusive policy.
Because the principal is so, like, supportive of trans kids and non-binary kids in his school. He does extra trainings with the teachers which should not be school site by school site based. It should be a little bit more uniform.
It's easy to imagine how a principal with different priorities might create a less trans-inclusive space on their campus simply because there are not regular district-wide trainings for all staff on LGBTQ+ student needs. And sometimes, essential things get overlooked. Emma Kniesbacher, a senior at Berkeley High. She's the president of the Alliance for Gender Expansive Youth at her school and has been fighting for the basic right to bathrooms for the past year. Here is Emma.
And Berkeley High is not a safe space or a happy space to be a trans kid. Because if you're a trans kid at Berkeley High, when you need to use the bathroom, you either have to walk all the way across the school, which you aren't allowed to do technically because the hall passes only let you into one building. Or you have to hide out in a teacher's bathroom. But if you try to use a teacher's bathroom, odds are one of the administrators will walk up to you and say, "You can't go there, walk all the way across the school."
But it isn't just bathrooms that are a problem. She says the support given to students at the elementary school level is insufficient for dealing with this kind of ingrained negativity in the high school culture.
Berkeley's really ostensibly progressive. Like, superficially, it tries to make everybody safe, regardless of ethnicity and gender and sexuality and class. But in reality, when you get to things that actually take a lot of hard work, when you get to actually making difficult situations, difficult realities for students and everyone in the city better, Berkeley doesn't step up unless it's forced to.
The district's slow response to the requests of the trans and non-binary high schoolers was demoralizing. And it added to feelings of invisibility and vulnerability at school.
Really, every trans person I know has struggled with their mental health at some point, and most of them have struggled with it a lot because this society, this country, doesn't make trans people safe, doesn't accept us, and it's not going to accept us anytime soon unless we fight for it.
And fights just like this are happening everywhere, taking place on the local, state, and federal stage.
Kids learn how to differentiate and how to discriminate. These are learned behaviors. And if we actually want to counter this, we have to understand that kids actually learn how to be allies.
That's Sonia again. More and more people are getting on board with this frame of mind. The Biden administration has made significant changes. Anyone who has ever advocated for LGBTQ+ student support, like Kim, knows that the most important fighting is done close to home.
What has worked consistently at a small scale is a group of teachers and administrators and school board members who have really listened to the voices of those whose experience we're talking about, so queer and transgender students and families.
So really, it's up to us and our allies to make sure that our voices get heard. That's what's gonna make us safe. We know who we are, and we know what we need. We just need you to listen.
Thanks, Amaya. Even with the national election coming up, it's important to remember that local advocacy can still make a huge difference. So, Amalia, what should listeners expect for next week's episode?
Next week, we'll hear from Jeremy Straws. He's telling us about the effects of the war on Palestine in the Bay Area Jewish community.
I'm really looking forward to hearing about his personal connection to this story. That's next time. Stay tuned. You've been listening to TBH, a podcast from KALW Public Radio. The feature you heard in this episode was produced by Amaya Dorman McKenzie. It was edited by Sarah Lai Sterling, who taught in the program along with Tru Nguyen.
Ava Richards is our production assistant. Our artwork was created by Awan Mance. James Rollins and Tarek Fuda are our engineers. Shireen Audel is our supervising editor. Ben Trefney is our executive producer. This project was made possible with support from the California Arts Council, California Humanities, Silicon Valley Community Foundation, and Association for Continuing Education. Thanks for listening. I'm your host, Amalia Madrid-Lilly, along with Anthra Gangwal.
That was episode 4 of the latest season of TBH, our KALW podcast made by, about, and for teenagers. We'll be playing new episodes here on Cross Currents Mondays. You can find that story and all our past seasons at kalw.org/TBH, and make sure to subscribe on your favorite podcast player. For Cross Currents, I'm Hanat Baba.